2050 sounds like a long way off. It is not. If you work backward from that deadline, and the aviation industry really should be doing that math right now, you realize that the decisions being made today, the factory floors running behind schedule today, the tail numbers still flying past their planned retirement dates today, are the ones that determine whether net zero is a real outcome or just a number on a press release. I'm Tower, this is Atis on Radio Hangar, and today we need to talk about something the aviation industry has been reluctant to say out loud. The delivery crisis isn't just an airline operations problem. It may be the single biggest structural threat to the industry's own climate commitment. Before we get into it, today's show is brought to you by AviationSold.com, aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSold.com. All right. Let's build this out. In 2021, the International Air Transport Association, IATA, formalized what had been a stated aspiration into something resembling a commitment: net zero carbon emissions from aviation by 2050. It was a significant moment. The industry was still crawling out of the pandemic. Passenger numbers were a fraction of pre-COVID levels. And here was the global airline trade body saying, in effect, here is the long-term target. Here is the direction of travel. The plan was never simple. Anyone who told you it was simple was not being straight with you. Net zero for aviation by 2050 requires a combination of things happening simultaneously and at scale. Sustainable aviation fuel, SAF, needs to move from a tiny fraction of total fuel supply to something like 65% of all jet fuel consumed, according to most credible roadmap models. New technology aircraft need to replace older, less efficient fleets at a pace that keeps fleet-wide emissions trending downward. Operational improvements, better routing, optimized descents, reduced ground taxi times contribute at the margins but cannot carry the load by themselves. And further out, hydrogen propulsion and electric aviation need to mature enough to cover short-haul and regional flying in ways that current technology simply cannot. Each of those pillars is already under pressure. But the one that's cracking the fastest right now is the new aircraft pillar. And it's cracking because Boeing and Airbus cannot build planes fast enough to meet the orders that airlines placed. Here's what you need to know about why new aircraft matter so much to the emissions. Math: a Boeing 737 MAX 8 burns roughly 14 to 20% less fuel per seat than the 737-800. It replaced depending on mission and load factor. An Airbus A320neo family aircraft delivers somewhere in the range of 15 to 20% better fuel efficiency than the classic CEO variant. The Boeing 787 Dreamliner was a revolutionary step, roughly 25% more fuel efficient per passenger mile than the aircraft it displaced. The Airbus A350 follows a similar story. These are not incremental gains. At the scale of a global airline fleet, these percentage points translate to hundreds of millions of tons of carbon dioxide over the service life of each aircraft. The logic of the net zero roadmap assumed that airlines would be retiring their oldest, thirstiest jets on schedule and replacing them with new generation aircraft at the rate that the order books implied. The order books implied a very optimistic rate. Boeing's production problems have been extensively reported, and this is a factual statement, not a judgment. The 787 line experienced a multi-year halt in deliveries due to manufacturing defects and certification issues. That grounding cost airlines dozens of aircraft years of new generation flying. The 737 MAX had its own well-documented grounding, which cascaded into a backlog that the Renton facility is still working through. Then came the door plug incident in January 2024, which triggered additional Federal Aviation Administration scrutiny, production caps, and a slowdown that is still affecting output well into the current year. Airbus has its own set of problems, which is somewhat less discussed, but no less real. Supply chain disruptions, engines in particular, with CFM International and Pratt & Whitney both experiencing production challenges, have meant that Airbus has been delivering aircraft late, sometimes significantly late, to customers who had been counting on those frames arriving on schedule. The A320neo family, the backbone of single-aisle commercial aviation, has been affected. The A350 program has faced its own scheduling pressure. The net effect across both manufacturers is a backlog that is genuinely historic in size. As of recent reporting in Simple Flying and across the trade press, the combined Airbus and Boeing order backlog sits at something in the range of 14,000 aircraft. That number has been cited repeatedly, and it represents years, in many cases, a decade or more, of production at current rates. What that means operationally for airlines is straightforward. Aircraft they expected to retire are still flying. Older frames that were penciled in as departures from the fleet have been penciled back in. Airlines that wanted to simplify their fleets and shed fuel-inefficient types are instead operating mixed fleets, keeping maintenance costs high and emissions per seat higher than the roadmap assumed. American Airlines, Delta, United, Lufthansa, Ryanair. Every major carrier has some version of this story. Ryanair, which operates an almost entirely 737-based fleet and had aggressive growth plans tied directly to MAX deliveries, has been among the most vocal. CEO Michael O'Leary has repeatedly and publicly called out Boeing for the delivery shortfalls, framing it as a commercial problem. But there is an environmental dimension that rarely gets the same headline treatment. When an airline flies an older 737-800 instead of the MAX that was supposed to replace it, that is extra fuel burned on every single cycle. Multiply that across a fleet of dozens or hundreds of aircraft, across thousands of flights per year, and you're looking at millions of additional tons of carbon dioxide entering the atmosphere compared to what the net zero models assumed. The gap between the modeled emissions trajectory and the actual emissions trajectory widens with every delayed delivery. And here's where the timeline becomes uncomfortable. The 2050 net zero target is not a light switch. You cannot wait until 2049 and then suddenly flip aviation to clean. The emissions trajectory needs to start bending downward significantly before the middle of the century. Many analysts and environmental researchers have argued that the peak needs to arrive in the late 2020s, followed by a sustained decline through the 30s and 40s. If the fleet renewal that was supposed to drive that peak doesn't happen on schedule, the curve doesn't bend when it needs to. SAF, to its credit, is gaining traction. Production is growing. More refineries are coming online, policy incentives in the United States through provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act and in Europe have created real economic drivers for SAF production that didn't exist 5 years ago. In 2023, global SAF production was estimated at around 300 million liters. The International Energy Agency projects that needs to scale to something like 450 billion liters annually by 2050 to meet aviation's demand. Those numbers illustrate the scale of the challenge. 300 million liters to 450 billion, that is a three orders of magnitude expansion over roughly 25 years. Progress, yes, on track, not obviously, which brings us back to aircraft. Because SAF is a fuel, it works in existing engines. That's one of its genuine advantages. It doesn't require replacing the entire fleet, just the fuel going into tanks that are already flying. But SAF's impact is directly proportional to how many flight cycles are being flown and in what aircraft. An older, less efficient aircraft burning SAF still burns more SAF per seat mile than a newer aircraft would. So, fleet renewal and SAF are not competing solutions. They are complementary. Delay fleet renewal and you increase the SAF burden. Slow SAF adoption and you depend more heavily on fleet renewal. Right now, both are behind schedule simultaneously. There are voices in the industry who argue that the 2050 target remains achievable, that the delivery delays are a temporary disruption, that Boeing's production issues will resolve, that Airbus will clear its backlog, that the fleet will be renewed, just on a slightly shifted timeline. Those voices tend to work for the airlines or the manufacturers, which is not a reason to dismiss them, but it is worth noting. There are other analysts, including researchers cited in recent coverage from Simple Flying and in reports from Transport and Environment, a European advocacy group that tracks aviation emissions closely, who are more skeptical. Their argument is that the delivery delays are not an isolated crisis but a symptom of deeper structural fragility in the supply chain, one that was exposed by COVID, compounded by post-pandemic demand surges, and is not likely to resolve cleanly or quickly. They point out that even before the delivery crisis, the SAF ramp-up was running behind projections. Even before the door plug incident, Boeing's production quality issues were raising red flags. The delivery crisis did not create a problem. It accelerated one that was already developing. What does this mean for people in the aviation community who care about the long-term health of the industry? Which, if you're listening to this show, I'd guess includes you. A few things worth holding on to. First, the conversation about aviation and sustainability is not going away. Regulatory pressure in Europe is real and intensifying. The European Union Emissions Trading System now covers intra-European flights. The Carbon Offsetting and Reduction Scheme for International Aviation, CORSIA, administered through the International Civil Aviation Organization, is gradually tightening. These are not hypothetical future policies. They are current structures that airlines are already managing around. The financial incentive to operate fuel-efficient aircraft is not just about optics. It is increasingly about cost and compliance. Second, for those of you in general aviation, and I know our audience skews significantly toward the pilots who fly their own planes corner of this industry, the implications are different but not zero. SAF availability for piston engines is a separate and slower developing story. Unleaded AVGS has its own timeline and its own politics, separate from the jet fuel SAF picture, but the regulatory and social environment that gets shaped by how commercial aviation handles its emissions commitment will eventually set the context for general aviation policy discussions too. These things connect. Third, the aircraft manufacturers themselves are under a kind of compounding pressure that may be underappreciated. They need to resolve production quality and supply chain issues in the near term. They need to develop next-generation aircraft, sometimes referred to as the new mid-market or narrow-body replacement programs, that are dramatically more efficient than current-generation designs. And they need to do this while simultaneously funding hydrogen and hybrid electric development programs that may define aviation in the second half of the century. That is a lot of demands on the engineering and capital resources of two companies that together essentially form a global duopoly in large commercial aviation. The competitive landscape does add a layer here. COMAC, the Chinese state-owned manufacturer, is advancing the C919 into service. Embraer continues to develop its regional jet and increasingly sustainable aviation technology programs. The duopoly is under pressure, slowly. Whether that pressure accelerates innovation or complicates an already strained industry remains to be seen. What I keep coming back to is this: the 2050 net zero goal, when it was announced, was greeted in some quarters as ambitious and in others as aspirational to the point of wishful. The delivery crisis doesn't resolve that debate, but it does add a data point. When the physical infrastructure of fleet renewal, the factories, the supply chains, the certification pipelines, struggles to keep pace with the demands placed on it, and when that happens during a period that was supposed to be the crucial early slope phase of the emissions reduction curve, it tells you something about how thin the margins are. You can commit to a destination and still miss a turn. The industry committed to net zero 2050. The turn it needed to make in the early part of this decade, accelerated fleet renewal, parallel SAF ramp-up, operational efficiency gains, has been partially missed. The destination may still be reachable, but it requires either a significant acceleration in all the contributing factors, or an honest accounting of what the revised trajectory actually looks like and how much more weight falls on technologies that don't yet exist at scale. Aviation has done remarkable things before. The industry looks almost nothing like it did 50 years ago in terms of fuel efficiency. The gains made through aerodynamics, engine design, composite materials, and digital flight management are genuinely extraordinary. No reason to assume that trajectory can't continue, but trajectory requires momentum, and right now some of the systems that build that momentum are running behind. I pulled today's story from reporting by Simple Flying, with additional context from IATA and Transport and Environment. If you want to dig deeper, those sources are worth your time. You can find us at RadioHangar.com. The question of whether 2050 is still on track doesn't have a clean answer today. Keep an eye on the delivery numbers. They'll tell you more than any press release will.